Now on News Talk, as part of our winter season of documentary on News Talk, producer Emma Cawley takes us through a day in the life of a very special cafe at St Finbar's Hospital in Cork, in The Cafe.
On the last Friday of every month, a group of people come together in a small room at St Finbar's Hospital in Cork. It's a rare occasion for these people to sit down and relax over tea, share some stories, have a laugh, or unburden themselves in a brief respite from the treadmill of day-to-day life.
Oh, the factories may be roaring with the boom-a-lacka, zoom-a-lacka-wee, but there isn't any roar when the clock strikes four. Everything stops for tea.
We're in an older wing in the grounds of St Finbar's, but the room is bright and airy. People young and old are sitting at tables covered in checkered cloths and set with china, chatting, drinking tea. But what brings them all together today might not be immediately obvious.
I suppose one of the good things that the cafe can provide is just that sense of we are not alone, that other people may well, you know, once conversations start to evolve, that people realise that there are other people in similar situations, and that in itself can even be very sort of therapeutic for people.
He loves coming. But it is a lovely atmosphere, and there's no pressure on people to do anything or say anything or do, you know.
It's very different for a lot of people. And really, when they come to the cafe, they're interacting over a shared cup of tea, they're chatting, interacting, talking about the news item, the Cork match at the weekend. So it's a very positive focus, and I think that's very encouraging.
I was speaking to a lady in older today, and I drew fierce consolation from her because we were talking, and then she forgot what she was after saying, and I found fierce strength in that, knowing I'm not being disrespectful towards her, because that's me some days.
I just love the disease. I mean, it's kind of weird, but I do. I'm kind of hooked on it now.
Welcome to the Cork Alzheimer Cafe. The Cork Alzheimer Cafe was established in 2012 by the Cork Alzheimer Cafe Foundation with St Finbar's Departments of Gerontology, Rehabilitation and Old Age Psychiatry. When it started, it was the second Alzheimer Cafe in Ireland and the first outside of Dublin. But what exactly is an Alzheimer Cafe? And where did this idea come from?
I'm Dr. Gemma Jones, and I'm the person at the moment who is the chair of the Alzheimer Cafe UK charity.
Over the years, Gemma has helped set up cafes throughout the UK and is visiting Ireland to talk at a workshop advising those setting up cafes in Ireland.
My real claim to fame is that I am a colleague of Dr. Bear Meesen, who founded the Alzheimer Cafe concept in 1997 in the Netherlands. So we've been colleagues for many, many years academically, and I was the first person with others to start the first cafe in England to see if we could try and reproduce what was being done very successfully in the Netherlands. And we did that. We have about 30 cafes in the United Kingdom. And at this course that we're teaching here right now, we have at least 6-7 cafes from Ireland represented, with a whole lot of people who are running cafes and trying to work with this model, and a lot of people are interested in setting up cafes.
Well, right now, there's a new trend. It's near Seattle, but it could expand. Medical reporter Jocelyn Momentis.
The Carers Association of South Staffordshire organises a series of monthly events where patients and carers can come together in an informal setting. It's called the Alzheimer's Cafe.
Voilà l'objectif principal des Alzheimer Café, véritable lieu d'échange.
This is on the back of cafes already having been distributed to other countries. So cafes have been tried in, I don't know the order of them all, but it's Germany, Belgium, Italy, Greece, United States, Canada, and most recently they've been tried, I went to demonstrate some in Romania a few years ago, Hungary, and now a book is coming out about how to set them up in Japan. So the idea is taking off in many places because it's meeting a new kind of need. The Alzheimer Cafe, unlike some other types of support, was intended to be the first form of support that people with dementia and their families receive post-diagnostically. So we call it a form of group support that happens monthly, and it happens in a safe atmosphere. So the things that you're going to discuss at a cafe aren't easy to talk about, but they need talking about. There's a lot of invisible pain that people carry, a lot of emotional pain to do with not understanding and changing relationships, and we make some of those things speakable about at a cafe, so people wouldn't come there to talk about those things if it wasn't nice and safe. Dr. Bear Meason, who's a clinical psychologist, had been asking for the psychology curriculum there to include increasingly how to support people emotionally and to give them education related to the emotional pains related to having dementia or caring for people with dementia. And he was impatient. The curriculum didn't change as quickly as he thought it should. And in the end, he said, we can't wait. We have to do something about the pain people are feeling. So he rented a room off his own, you know, bat at the University of Leiden in Holland. And he put up signs saying Alzheimer Cafe here tonight. He made his own urns of coffee. And he invited some of the family members of the people he was working with to come and anyone else at the university who was interested. About, I think, 18 people showed up the first night. Can't remember the exact numbers. The second month they met, there were something like 60 or 70 people. And by the next month, the press were there and they had to find other venues because there was so much demand and so much excitement about speaking openly about dementia together for everybody. It's the first time in the world that had been done. People forget that now. We have so many cafes and we take for granted that we'll speak about dementia in front of the person with dementia and with their family carers or neighbors or friends. But this was a brand new precedent because everyone assumed you can't be honest and open and sensitive and accurate. All those things are important in their own way in front of a person who has this illness. So in a way, we're in the same position now with Alzheimer's disease and dementia as we were with cancer about 30 years ago. We didn't like to talk to the person who had cancer. We gave the diagnosis to their family members. And then we learned to be honest and said, everybody has to know about it. It helps stop the secrets and the whispering, and it helps people plan and be included. And now we're doing the same thing for dementia. And this was the first step in doing that.
What would you expect if you went to an Alzheimer's cafe?
The first thing that you would expect would be a sign telling you that there was a cafe going on just at the outside of the venue, and that you would be greeted by someone at a little table to sign in who had some kind of identification on that they were a volunteer with the Alzheimer Cafe group. I hope you'd hear nice music playing in the background, whether that was live or, you know, some nice CD music, and that you would be introduced to what was going to happen at the cafe. We're going to socialize here. And that you would be introduced to what was going to happen at the cafe. We're going to socialize here, meet people, have some drinks. And in different countries, they do different kinds of drinks, but coffees and teas are the sort of standard. And that people would explain to you that there was going to be a topic for discussion for the evening led by someone who's competent to speak about that, related to the process of having dementia, and that there would be more time for questions. I hope they'd explain to people that there would be professionals in the room that you can speak to without any crisis being there. You can just access professionals. You can access volunteers. You can access other family members who know the ropes. They've been a long time coming to the cafe. They know what to expect. And you can access other newcomers. So there are all kinds of levels of support built into one little kind of an event that sounds safe to go to. When you call it a cafe, it has a very kind of a low threshold, easy entry feel to it. And what gets married to that is some important education about dementia, particularly the psychological aspect of what this whole illness and this whole category of illnesses does to our emotional responses and ability to cope. So I hope you'd find it a lovely, safe place to be in, that you'd want to come back because it was stimulating intellectually and emotionally.
When you need a little pickup, you'll find a little teacup will always hit the spot.
Creating this safe space is a crucial element of the Alzheimer Cafe's success. It's a place to meet people, have a bit of fun, or even a sing-song at a time when social circles can shrink. Facing up to a diagnosis, talking about it, asking for help, and learning to cope are all extremely difficult parts of the process. The staff at St. Finbar's have created a place to do all of these things.
I'm Mary Foley. I'm the advanced nurse practitioner here in St. Finbar's Hospital and involved in the committee in setting up the Alzheimer Cafe.
My name is Judy Wall and I'm a senior clinical psychologist working here in St. Finbar's attached to the Alzheimer Cafe also.
We've just been there at the Alzheimer Cafe. How did you feel that it went today?
I felt it went really well today. I suppose you could sense that there was a nice, comfortable atmosphere inside in the room and a nice interaction between people. I suppose the emphasis is on essentially peer support with that mix of healthcare professionals present to give that additional support and information if required.
Yeah, we had Maeve Carmody, who's a community dietitian with the HSE, came and spoke to us today about diet and nutrition for people with dementia. And our audience was obviously a mixture of people with dementia and their carers. And it was really well received. She spoke about, you know, common problems like under-eating and overeating. The attention span of the audience was incredible, considering, you know, that's a topic that maybe people would find difficult to stay with for, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes. One of the key concepts with the Alzheimer Cafe is that the word Alzheimer obviously is the first word you hear in the title. And Maeve was using the word dementia and Alzheimer's interchangeably during her talk. And one of the common fears that family members would have about coming to a cafe like this is that their relative might find it very distressing to hear those words used. And in fact, we had a very good attendance today and nobody was distressed, worried, concerned. Everybody just was engaged with the conversation because the things she was talking about were relevant to anybody in terms of, you know, thinking about diet and nutrition.
And has that happened before where people were using terminology like Alzheimer's and dementia that people would find that a little bit upsetting or scary?
Well, we've had a lot of carers who would express that as a concern and maybe as an obstacle or a barrier to them in attending. And what we've done then is we've really encouraged those people maybe to come themselves in the first instance and really to see that there is a mixture of people here, some people who are sufferers of dementia themselves. And I think that's the best way for people to have their fears allayed is to actually meet other people who are sufferers and to realise that it's actually okay to sort of use those words, and it's probably the best way of breaking down barriers and dealing with some of those anxieties and concerns.
What is it that you think those carers are worried about? What are they trying to protect their loved one from?
I think they're concerned that people will just be overwhelmed and just won't be able to cope with that diagnosis. And there can be a lot then of trying to protect people. I mean, that's the main motivation, people trying to protect people. But often a lot of the tension that's created in the effort to protect people is actually just... it just sort of evaporates once people can actually have a conversation. And as you saw there at the cafe today, you know, there wasn't that kind of barrier because it's something that's sort of out there in the open and it's, you know, it's in the title. So that's, you know, a very good way of just dealing with those concerns.
Because that was the nice thing about it. I mean, it was a really warm, convivial kind of atmosphere. And for a lot of people, when you hear the word Alzheimer's or dementia, that's quite scary. The atmosphere in there flies in the face of that in a way.
I suppose that was our key challenge in relation to, I suppose the key focus is about enablement and focusing on abilities rather than things that people can't do, which can be the focus inside in a medical clinic. And there's so many positive things people can do about memory loss, and that really is our focus about healthy aging, healthy living. And really when they come to the cafe, they're interacting over a shared cup of tea, they're chatting, interacting, talking about the news item, the Cork match at the weekend. So it's a very positive focus, and I think that's very encouraging. And we're very conscious of the fact, I suppose, that there will be some there with mild cognitive impairment, mild memory loss, just looking for reassurance that maybe it isn't something to be overly concerned about and that there are positive things they can do about it. And we, within that circumstance, we link them in with the memory gym and other activities, art therapy, that are very proactive and just general health and well-being about exercise and diet and putting the emphasis on that.
That's the other great thing about it as well. People in this situation might be waiting for a clinical appointment for a number of months, but if you walk into that room there, you've got a number of people, each qualified in their particular field, and you know, you're an open point of contact for people to speak to there.
A lot of the time what we find is that there's so much anxiety around coping and that aloneness can accompany with an illness, and maybe sometimes behind closed doors there's a lot of coping that goes on with carers and a lot of stress goes on with the individuals themselves, and who do they call. So the fact that they've got a contact number or they know that somebody is there, that quite often it's the difference between hospital admission because they have a healthcare professional here who allays the fears and anxieties. We mightn't always have the solution, but there's usually somebody in the room that's been through a similar situation.
And do you find that there's any kind of common queries or what sort of questions would people come to you with, Judy?
I've often spoken to carers. I suppose, you know, we have the facility to see people in one-to-one in confidence as well. And it's often that sort of stress around carrying the kind of the carer burden themselves
People where maybe they're feeling that they're sort of solely carrying it for the family, that maybe other family members are either in denial, not recognising the problem, minimising it, or just maybe aren't around, you know, family in different parts of the country or abroad, and the person who's sort of the frontline primary carer maybe really feeling the burden on their own and that kind of social isolation. And I suppose one of the good things that the cafe can provide is just that sense of we are not alone, that other people may well, you know, once conversations start to evolve, that people realise that there are other people in similar situations, and that in itself can even be very sort of therapeutic for people.
On one hand, you have the people who are suffering themselves from Alzheimer's or dementia, but, you know, you're dealing with people that are experiencing this huge, overwhelming kind of process in their life if they're caring for somebody. You're obviously in a really important role in that capacity in guiding them through that too.
Yeah, and we obviously also try to kind of signpost people towards other facilities and other services we have here. I'm involved in running a carers training program for family carers of people with dementia. We offer that a few times a year. And, you know, that's, again, it's a more specific information and education, six two-hour sessions for people looking at a range of topics in more detail, and that's just for carers. It's a different sort of forum to the cafe. And some people have come and they haven't ever had contact with our service before. So, you know, again, we can sort of signpost them towards services like that. Or as Mary said, you know, but maybe back to the GP if they haven't been in contact with their GP for a while, is that sort of central referral source really, and you know, just helping people to reconnect with the health services that they might need.
What's lovely to see is to see individuals of memory loss burst into song and sing and entertain and have that zest for life, just to kind of prove. And I suppose typically somebody said at the cafe today, am I the only person here with Alzheimer's? And I think that probably speaks for itself, that you sit in the room and nobody knows memory loss. It's not something that you see, and really it doesn't matter at the end of the day, the kind of that sense of support and camaraderie and just friendship. Yeah. It's really a nice thing to see.
And that sort of courage to just get up in front of a group of people, yeah, and sing. I mean, there are many people in the room who don't have dementia who wouldn't be as eager to do that. And it's that kind of breaking down barriers. And as one of our attenders, somebody with dementia themselves, said, you know, it's really important to have a sense of humour as well. So I think it's that sense of trying to kind of keep the balance between humour, fun, but at the same time not sort of denying or sort of pushing the issue under the carpet either, having a forum where people can just, you know, be honest about it rather than having to sort of, you know, hide away and keep it sort of something that's a secret in the family.
Coming up, we'll hear the stories of some of those people visiting the Alzheimer Cafe.
I just love old people, and I love dementia. I just love the disease. I mean, it's kind of weird, but I do. I'm kind of hooked on it now.
You're listening to The Cafe on News Talk 106 to 108.
I like a nice cup of tea in the morning for to start the day, you see. And at half past 11, well, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea.
As we've already heard, a key feature of the Alzheimer Cafe is that attendees can meet with experts in the area of Alzheimer's and dementia in an informal and relaxed setting. If you happen to visit the Alzheimer Cafe at St. Finbar's in Cork, there's a pretty good chance your path will cross with this man.
My name is William Malloy. I'm a geriatrician, and I'm a professor of medicine in UCC, and I'm the director or the chairman of the Centre for Gerontology and Rehabilitation here in UCC. I love dementia. It's kind of scary, but I do. I just love old people, and I love dementia. I just love the disease. I mean, it's kind of weird, but I do. I'm kind of hooked on it now. I love the whole total package. I mean, you're dealing with the total person. You're dealing with, they're losing the memory, but they also have medical problems as well. You're dealing with them, you're dealing with the family, you're dealing with the system. It's complex. you know, any one day there's a driving issue, there's somebody who's ripping them off, there's somebody, the nephew is stealing their money, they're wandering, there's a behaviour problem, they're not eating properly, they're not taking their medications. It's just the complexity of it and the range of issues. I mean, you know, if you're doing cardiac stuff, you're just doing hearts. But we do the total person in society with their family. And the level and range of complexity is fantastic. I just love the challenges with it. And always, 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 there's never enough resources. And there never will be. So you have to kind of do as much as you can with the little bit that you have. So it's a great game.
That's the kind of stuff that would make me feel a bit overwhelmed or think that it's, you know, it's quite scary, the complexity of the problem and what can happen in people's lives.
The students come to us, you know, they sit in the clinic and you say, what's it like? And they say, complex. You know, it's like, because you never know what's going to walk in the door, right? It's great. I mean, you get good at it and you get really good at it. And, you know, the abuse issues, you've seen it. I mean, I've seen everything 1,000 times, you know. I've been doing it for 30 years, so I've probably seen, I don't know, God, the number of people with dementia, it must be ridiculous. But eventually you get to figure out the solution.
You've been working in this area for about 30 years, you said. You know, how's the nature of your work changed over that time?
The system has changed. When I first started working in Alzheimer's, these people didn't know what it was. And I remember when I went to Canada working in geriatrics, people didn't know what a geriatrician did. And now people get it. I mean, the numbers are staggering. I don't know if you know the numbers of dementia. We're going to go from 40,000 to 120,000 by 2050. And the whole demographic is shifting. If you look at the 20th century, the story of the 20th century was the doubling of the life expectancy. In 1900, it was 47. By the end of the century, it was 80. So people actually lived 40 years longer. And that's incredible compared to getting to the moon. If I said to you, what was more important, getting to the moon, developing nuclear power, or you live another 30 years? I mean, it's a no-brainer. And we're still living longer. So as the population ages, the numbers explode. So I've seen that. I remember when I was working in Finbars here as an intern. I remember this is true. Somebody said, hey, there's an 80-year-old on the ward. You want to go look at her? We all run down. Wow, she's 80. Look at her. Jesus, 80-year-olds are driving into the clinic now. They're going dancing. You know, it's nothing to be a 90-year-old. We got people 100 driving. So that shift that's occurred even in my lifespan is incredible. And the length that people are living longer. And sometimes we think that's a bad thing. Sometimes we think that's a great drain on society. It's a great drain on healthcare. But it's a huge boon to society. I mean, when you start complaining about people living into their 80s, you know, we're all going to be there. And how do we, you know, protect the services for those people? That's what it's all about.
Looking around the room at the Alzheimer Cafe at St Finbar's, it's not always immediately obvious who exactly suffers from memory problems and who are the family members or carers. You could be forgiven for assuming it's the older visitors, as for the most part, memory impairment, Alzheimer's and dementia are most likely to affect the over 65s. However, this isn't always the case.
My name is Mary. I come to the centre the last Friday of every month when we have the Alzheimer's Cafe. I have mild cognitive impairment myself, so I suppose I'm on the middle of the road in comparison to some people here, but I still find it's a great help. Recall now is my major thing, so I'd have problems recollection of what's going on. Even when I leave here today, I mightn't remember a quarter of what we said, that kind of a thing. I'd have a problem with appointments if I can't write down if someone rang the house and I can write down the details straight away. It's gone. It's like someone turned out the light, like it's just wiped. I'd lose track in a conversation if I didn't get to say, we'll say if there was three people, if I didn't get to say what I wanted to say straight away and I got to say it later, it would come out all wrong. It wouldn't come out the same as my head wanted to say it, that kind of a thing. Because my son says to me, Mum, you wander off. And I know by looking at you when you wander off, you're like, your focus is gone. You know, and then it's like I come back in for a minute. It doesn't feel that bad now in my head, in fairness, but I come back into the situation then. What happened there? What did I miss now? Did you say something? What was I meant to be doing? That kind of a scenario, you know.
When did you start experiencing those kind of problems? When did you realise that there was something wrong, I suppose?
I suppose the last couple of years, it became more of an issue for me as time went on. And harder, I suppose, for me to, from day to day, to deal with it. I have an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old, two teenagers now, you can imagine. And my daughter, now at the moment, has decided she's going to do this for me. It's she put post box. It's a plastic pocket up on my whiteboard in the bedroom, and she's putting all the Revelin details into it, appointments for herself, for school and everything, and I find that now is great. I can refer back to that, and I have to refer back because otherwise I'll forget I have a post box, that kind of a thing. It's like that.
A lot of the people that I've met that have difficulties are a lot, seem to be a lot older than you.
Yes. I'm 50, so I am young. Yeah, I'm young. It doesn't matter to me here, though. It's not a problem for me here. It's a problem for me now in different areas, all right, if I'm in different groups or like that now, if I'm in groceries, in a queue or whatever, I'm obvious then. It's obvious to me then that I'm young to have this. But I know it's not unusual either. You know, I'm not the first 50-year-old woman like to be suffering from this memory problem, you know. It's, I suppose maybe somewhere down the line, I'm thinking, will I be 70 when I have dementia or whatever? I don't kind of, it mightn't, like. It's not a foregone conclusion I will, you know. But I know that's somewhere off in the distance as well. So for me, it's important that I make the best of what I have now when I'm proper mint, I suppose, enough now to know that I can enjoy what I have.
Whenever you made the decision to go and get help with it, yeah, that must have been a frightening time to face up to it.
It was, because I didn't know where people were going to help me. I didn't know where it was going to start, because I'd only patches, we'd say, of phone calls and trying to keep track of an appointment and what people said to me when I was assessed. You know, and I brought home, actually, this lady here gave me a photocopy of the assessment, and I went through that numerous times. And I drew consolation from it, actually, in its own way, because it came out of the 100, I was halfway there. So that's good. 48% out of 100 is okay, like, considering, because I have other health issues as well, so it's good, you know. But going back to that now, what you say to me there about how did I feel about...
When you made the decision to go and get help, was it a frightening thing just to face up to it and go, right, I might need to go and ask somebody how to deal with this?
Yeah, or where's it going to lead? Because I'm functioning fine. I have a normal life, you know, except for the odd bits and pieces I don't remember. That's frustrating, all right, for appointments. You know, I miss appointments, all right, and I get a phone call, where are you? That frustrates me, all right, like. But I'm glad I done it. I'm glad I came and got the help, and I got that there's like-minded people. And there is people, 50-year-olds, like, that have it. They maybe wouldn't, they're dreading going to get help. They can't face it, they can't admit it to themselves, you know. But it's the best option for anyone who's out there and they're struggling with memory and they think, oh my God, it's only me. That it's not. You know, there's loads of us out there, like, and there is help there, and there is, even it comes down to it, there's even medication for some people who need it. There is help there. You know?
And the great thing just that you notice when you come here to St. Finbar's, but for me anyway, I suppose when you're reading about memory loss and dementia and stuff, it's all very frightening and stuff, but when you come in here, it's great crack and everybody's having fun and, you know, everybody's talking about what's happening, but it's very much a relaxed and everybody's just getting on with it.
Yeah. I was speaking to a lady now there today, and I drew fierce consolation from her, because we were talking and then she forgot what she was after saying, and I found fierce strength in that now, and I'm not being disrespectful towards her, because that's me some days. You know, I know it sounds weird now, maybe, I don't know. But that's where I'm at sometimes, and it's just, I found consolation in it, being here, and I know majority of us here are feeling the same, Mary, to varying degrees.
Staff at St Finbar's and University College Cork are engaged in research to develop easier and more effective ways of identifying symptoms of dementia. Professor Willie Malloy, alongside his colleague Dr. Ronan O'Queeve, have devised the Mild Cognitive Impairment Test, which is shorter and more accurate than traditional screening methods.
Traditionally, what the test will do is they do orientation, what year, what month, what day. Because when you get dementia, the first thing you lose is orientation to time. And then you lose orientation to place. And then you lose orientation to person. You don't forget who your family are until much later in the disease. But early in the disease, people can't remember what day of the week it is, what date it is. Second stage, they want to go home to their childhood home. You know, you'll hear in the clinic all the time that the person take my home, they think their mother's still alive. So they lose the orientation to place. They think they want to go back to a childhood home. And then later they lose. So we check that. All of the tests will start off what year, what month, what day, what date, what place, where are you now, what country, what city. And then we go into short-term memory, because short-term memory is the thing. You can remember what happened 30 years ago, but you can't remember what happened a minute ago. So then we go and start checking short-term memory. So traditionally how we check short-term memory is I say to you, I'm going to name five words. Dog, do you want to do it?
Okay, yeah.
So let's say dog, rain, butter, love, door. You say them.
Dog, rain, butter, love, door.
Good man. Remember them now. Dog, rain, butter, love, door. Remember those because I'm going to ask you those in a minute. So you have to remember. I won't do it to you, don't worry. Dog, rain, butter, love, door. So then what you do is the person got them, you register them, and then we distract you. In our test, we get the person to draw a clock, put all the numbers in and put the time in at 10 past 11. And when you're finished the clock, we turn around and say, what were the five words I asked you to remember? And people with Alzheimer's can't remember. What five words? Gone. They don't get it because they can't. You can't store it. Yeah. When it's fascinating to think about it. If I were to say to you, name as many objects as you can that are yellow. Go ahead.
Sun, butter,
perfect.
Gold.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. You've gone into all of your memory banks and you've picked out yellow objects and you could discriminate yellow. I said, name furry animals. Name months, whatever, you can go in and find it. We don't know what that memory looks like in your brain. Is it a chemical? How's it stored? We have no clue. How you went into your memory banks and found those yellow things and brought them out, that's some trick. When you're laying them down, when you're laying down your memories, you're learning. We think it's in an electrical circuit. So I say to you, dog, rain, butter, love, door. You store those in an electrical circuit, which is kind of amazing when you think about it, that you could have wiring that would hold those words. And we think what happens is it goes around in a circuit in the brain. And when you get Alzheimer's disease, it's the connecting nuclei. They say they bounce off, imagine just for simplicity, they bounce off the left side of your head, the top, they bounce off the right side of your head, and they come down to the base of your skull. When they come down to the base of your skull, they come into a connecting nucleus, which is a collection of all these nerve cells. And it comes in and it goes out again. Well, when you get Alzheimer's disease, the connecting nuclei die. So imagine if you had 1,000 per whatever space, now you've only got 100. So when the nerve comes down, it's not connecting. So what happens is you're not able to hold it. So the first thing you lose when you get Alzheimer's, people always think it's short-term memory. It's actually the ability to learn or hold information. Because if you can't learn, you can't hold it, you can't learn it. So what happens is that connecting nerves or circuit comes down and it doesn't connect. So the dog, rain, butter, love, door is gone. Mm-hmm. You can't retrieve them. You can't learn them. You can't hold them. And that's the first thing that happens. And then we go into giving certain tasks. Like for one of the tasks that we do in our test is name as many animals as you can. And that's the ability to generate. Like you have to go in and find yellow things. Now, if you found somebody, normal person, they'll go dog, cat, bird, fish, bum, bum, bum. And then they'll go out to they'll say, cow, you see them go out to the country, cow, horse, goat, chicken, whatever. And then they go up to the zoo, right? If you have somebody with mild cognitive impairment, the early stages, they'll name seven or eight animals and then they just stop. It's like they dry up and they're there. That's funny, no, I can't think of another animal. Jeez, I can't. You think animals, yeah. I said dog, didn't I? Yeah. They just can't generate it. And when people with dementia, they say dog, cat, cow, horse. And then they pause and they say dog, cat, cow. They repeat the same four because they can't generate new ones and they can't remember what they told you. So the ability to generate words like that is very sensitive. And you can tell from the amount of information the person can learn and retrieve what stage it is, and you put it all together. So we put it all together into a score out of 100. We do it. And if you're below 50, you have dementia. And if you're 50 to 62, you have mild cognitive impairment. And if you're above 60, you're normal. Now, it varies depending on your age and education, but this is an exquisitely sensitive little test. It only takes 4 minutes. And it really is better than all of the other tests out there at the moment. Family doctors only have 5 to 10 minutes per visit. They're not going to spend 12 minutes doing a cognitive test. So we need to give them short, efficient little tests. So these become very important for screening, for diagnosing, for everything.
My name is Jim Cogan. I've Alzheimer's. Now, my method of coping with Alzheimer's, I wake in the morning, and the first thing I do is I look up at a newspaper, and I cross off the date. Now I know the day that today is for that morning. So now I'm away for the whole day. I've all day long. The Alzheimer's Cafe is there because we have memory loss. My memory is very short-term. It's short-term memory. I can sing all the songs. The only one song that my wife wouldn't let me sing today was that there's one fair county in Ireland. There's one fair county in Ireland with memories so glorious and grand, where nature has lavished its bounty. It's the orchards of Erin Greenland. I love its cathedral and city, once founded by Patrick so true, and it bears in the heart of its bosom the ashes of Brian Boru. My memory loss, I have it under control insofar as I read a newspaper first thing in the morning. I read the newspaper. Now I know what day I have for the rest of the day. My total philosophy.
It's the orchard of Erin's Greenland. I love its cathedral and city, once founded by Patrick so true.
In some situations, like a lot of carers that I've been speaking to already, they always talk about how people who are affected constantly go back to old memories and, you know, that kind of disassociation from their current time and place. Yeah, how come they can remember that sort of stuff but not recall the names of animals?
If you look at the filing cabinet there now, and you look at a drawer, okay, and we put the most recent memories in the front, the things that happened yesterday and the day before, and the distant memories are in the back. Remember we said the beginning of the disease, you can't lay down new information. You can't form new memories. So that's why people, they went on a trip yesterday and they have no recollection of it today. Something happened 5 minutes, they can't remember it. And families will notice, A, they start to repeat themselves. They repeat stories, repeat questions. They tell them, and they can't remember. What time are we going to see the doctor? You see, they repeat themselves. Yeah, he asked me 50 times on the way in the car, who are we going to see? Do you know what I mean? So what happens is, in the beginning, you can't lay down new information because you're kind of then you're stuck with your previous history. And then what happens is, as the nerves get damaged, the more recent memories get lost. So if you imagine somebody's coming in, a thief is coming in, and they're taking the files out of the cabinet from the beginning to the back. So eventually somebody is stuck 30 years ago. They still think their mother and father are alive. They're waiting for they think their wife is their sister, or they think their wife is their mother. And the only person they can remember is their mother or their sister. They don't even remember being married. And that's very hard on spouses because it takes away their life together. And people have real trouble with that because your whole life together is gone.
Betty is married to Jim, who we heard from just a moment ago. She's cared for him since he was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's.
Jim is my husband and he's been retired since 2002. But he was then diagnosed, as I say, about 4 years ago. But in hindsight, we probably look back and know that we know things that was changed in his disposition completely. And we put it down now to the early onset of the Alzheimer's.
But at the time, just before you got the diagnosis, you didn't know what was going on, did you not?
No, we didn't. We did know we did recognise his short-term memory was very poor, and that he was asking dates and names and that over and over again. But we didn't realise it. And then he himself went to his own GP and spoke to him about his memory and how he was forgetting so many things, and asked to be sent for diagnosis. I think it depressed him, first of all. I think he might have felt that he was losing control. He would have been a worker that would be very much in control in business and that sort of thing. So I think he felt that he could be losing control and become dependent on other people. I think that frightened him, definitely. He would see himself in a business, and he talks quite a lot about when he was working and back in his business time. And I think it was maybe in that he knew that he was so much in control then, but then he found himself not so much in control of stuff, you know. So I think did frighten him.
And how is he at the moment?
Well, he's quite good. Apart from, things upsetting him a little bit, and that he can't process, I think that's it. If he can't process things and they upset him, then, and he can get quite angry and agitated about it. And so then if you find it's not easy to reason with him then, because his brain is not reasoning things. And that would have been a big thing, because he would be very good at reasoning stuff out. He really would be a very good. He was a shop steward years ago, and he would very much be able to listen to both sides of an argument or anything like that. He would be very good at that. And I think now he knows now that he can't reason so well with things, and that he gets left behind with stuff. He can't process them just the way he could before.
So is it kind of a frustration thing a wee bit?
Yes, I would say it is, that he's frustrated with the things that he feels he can't do in terms of just interacting with people. And I reckon he knows he's repeating himself over and over again and things, and asking the same questions and not remembering things, but we've put in place at home, which he's quite happy with, a whiteboard up that we write down where we're going, what we're doing, anything that we're going to do, even I'm going to town to buy shoes or whatever. Like, I find that extremely difficult from my point of view, the feeling of being swamped sometimes with him, you know, that he doesn't want to be anywhere without me, do you know. But he's no bother, and he's, you know, he doesn't have to, I don't have to be minding him the time, and I can go out and leave him. And
and how about kind of your interaction between the two of you? You know, I spoke to him briefly out there, but I mean, you know, I know that you're taking care and helping him with the daily little tasks, the day-to-day life, but
I find the interaction harder than it was, because like he would say something, you see, and it would not be in my nature to say, yeah, it is, because I always enjoyed my own opinion and stuff. And I find that difficult, because that upsets him then, you know. He just said to me, why can't you just agree with me? And he would be sort of angry, like, and okay, that's fine, I said, it doesn't matter. But that really gets me, because I would find that before we could have honest to goodness debates about stuff and have our point of view and all that sort of thing, but that he doesn't seem to be able to grasp that anymore.
Your kids are grown up and they're gone away from home, essentially. Yeah. They've got their own families now.
But they're excellent. Yeah. My son, when he's off, he comes down for 2 or 3 days at a time, and he takes them away for the whole day. My daughter, she actually would walk past her son on the way from work every day, so she would pop her head in and say hello. They're very, very supportive. All of them went just and researched it straight away and got materials about it, and probably sad is a little bit to think, because they feel they're losing their dad. But they've adapted to it very, very well.
I know, my God. Jim is a fantastic singer.
I wish you joy, your tears fall, and if someday.
He's a good actor as well, I'd say. I think he's got the whole range of talent.
And we'll make a new start.
He loves coming. But it is a lovely atmosphere. It is a brilliant atmosphere. And there's no pressure on people to do anything or say anything or do, you know.
What do you get out of it? I presume it's nice to come and chat to the people that are in similar...
It is, and talk to other people, and I've spoken to other carers who can talk about the state he's at, and, you know, how when things upset him and that, and we can share that's par for the course and that sort of thing.
And so, for another month, the Alzheimer Cafe draws to a close at St Finbarr's Hospital in Cork. We've only seen a snapshot of the lives of staff and carers here, just a break of a couple of hours. But for those visiting, it's a lifeline and a reminder that however difficult the circumstances, it's possible to enjoy life and to live well.
I suppose I've worked with older people for about 20 years. They would be my preferred client group, and I think it's a mixture of rewarding and humbling. I mean, I never cease to be amazed at the endurance and tolerance, I guess, of carers, and many of whom are older people themselves, and you know, just really being there for the long haul for their loved ones. Well, I always remember a saying I heard a long time ago, which is never regret growing old, it's a privilege denied to many. So I think I always take great heart from that.
The Cafe was produced by Emma Cawley, sound by Neil Kavanagh, and funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee, with special thanks to staff and attendees at St Finbarr's Alzheimer Cafe. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in this programme, call the Alzheimer Society of Ireland National Helpline on 1800 341 341.